The imagery is just the stuff of nightmares. A weapon goes off, blood appears, and a body goes still. And it is often the case, as is often the case with a nightmare, you wake up and you just can't get the picture out of your head. Video of the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philandro Castillo has been shared by countless people and countless times since those videos went online last week. At this point, you have to make a real effort to avoid the footage if you don't want to see it. Anger, anxiety, and frustration follow every time one of those videos goes viral. Some therapists even say they're harmful to our mental health, especially those of us who are in minority communities. So how do we process these turbulent events without being swallowed by the sadness associated with them? Roxanne Donovan is a professor of psychology and interdisciplinary studies at Kennesaw State University. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, nice to be here.
Nice to have you. And Atira Charles is a professor at Florida A&M University and the executive director of the MASK Project. That's a national initiative to help successful professionals balance their authentic work-life identities. Good morning, Atira.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you? How have you been feeling and processing the events of the last couple of weeks?
You know, this last week has been very difficult, as it's been for the nation. But one of the things, you know, balancing my own individual emotions about things and also having a platform where I've been doing talks and helping people process, that's been the more difficult piece, because what it's really brought to the forefront is that there's a collective pain. And like you said earlier, anxiety that is existing in our community right now. And it's this feeling of powerlessness, this feeling of hopelessness and the what can I do? And a lot of time, because it was so hyper-stimulating and the events and the imagery came back to back to back, it's like people couldn't come up for air. You know, it's like being in a pool and somebody dunking you, and then before you can even take your next breath, you're dunked again. And I think that that anxiety and stress, while we all engage in that individually, I think that the collective pain, people usually have someone to call, and literally at this point, anyone you call is sitting in that same collective pain. And I think that that's one of the challenges that, you know, we're having in our community right now.
Roxanne Donovan, same question to you. How are you personally coping with recent events?
I mean, if I'm truthful, it's been really hard. It's been really challenging, and it is painful, as Atira mentioned. And I mean, racism is a reality for communities of color. In my research, Black women's 96% of Black women say they've experienced some form of racism a few times a year. So this isn't new for communities of color, and it's not new for me as a woman of color. So it's a wound that exists, and these videos pierce at that wound, making it deeper and more painful. But it is a reality. And so these videos depict the hard truth of the real consequences of racism at an extreme level, but we're all dealing with daily indignities that this adds to. So I think it's painful, and it's on top of a wound that already exists for an overwhelming number of us, including me.
Is there any small personal strategy that you have employed? Do you skip over the videos when you see them? Do you watch them? Have you taken social media vacations?
I take social media vacations. I particularly avoid the comments. And I use social media in a very prescribed way because it's a protective factor. For me, I used to read the comments, and I just think it is so particularly painful and re-traumatizing when someone is sharing their pain as a way to gain support, to gain community, and to find their center. And in the comments, their pain, if it's about a racist incident, is dismissed or minimized or disbelieved. And I have empathy for the people putting it out there, wanting to find some level of centeredness, and then I'm traumatized by reading some of the feed. And you know, on Facebook, our friends, our quote unquote friends, may not necessarily be people that we're very close with or that we've vetted or share our opinions. And I just think that can be so very painful when you're trying to use social media as a platform for community and support. So I make sure that I don't use social media that way, that I will reach out to people that I know share my point of view to get the social support that I need, and that we sit in the pain together, because in some ways that's validating and that's helpful. And not only for me, but research shows that too, that social support can be really helpful in modulating the emotional response to pain.
Go ahead, Atira.
And I think that we also are seeing on social media people feeling the need to be the racial representative and to change people's minds and to try to shift other people's paradigms in the midst of their own pain and coping. And I think that that's some of the internal tension that people in our community are feeling right now, this need to use our voice, but also feeling masked to not share too much, to potentially be judged, or people who have their coworkers on their Facebook pages. And so this idea of wanting to use and exert voice, but also wanting to suppress voice at the same time, you know, it's this dissonance that's just really driving people up a wall right now.
Yeah, Atira, talk more about this concept, a public mask.
So when we think about a mask, I use that metaphor to represent identity, right? So we all have these different identities that we wear out in the world, and we have all these different presentations of self that we have to bring. But where wearing a mask gets really tricky for people of stigmatized identities, i.e. the Black community, is that we're not sure in what situations and what contexts which mask to wear sometimes, right? Because of the stigma, nobody wants to be evaluated negatively, judged negatively, because you don't want the negative impact of that. But what that creates sometimes is a situation where your authentic self isn't able to show. Yeah. And when we're not able to show our authenticity, that creates anxiety, that creates stress, which impacts our just general life satisfaction. But if we take it to the workplace, now that impacts our performance, our ability to, you know, navigate our work environment. And so it's this whole idea of, you know, feeling the need to hide and conceal, but at the same time, trying to present a self that is authentic, that we have a piece about ourselves as well.
Yeah, it's almost a particularly fraught kind of code switching. My guests are professors Roxanne Donovan and Atira Charles. We're talking about police shooting videos and how best to deal with them on an emotional level, self-care, in this very tense time that we are all living through. We took to the streets of Atlanta and asked a few people about how they feel about police shooting videos, and here's what they had to say.
My name is Charmaine Caruso. I'm 28 years old, and I'm really, I guess, sensitive, and I try to protect my mental state and my emotional state, because some of them that have been coming up lately are very brutal, and it hurts. It sucks to watch, so it's scary.
My name is John Bourne. I am 53, and I'm from Ireland. Yeah, I mean, I don't live here, but I watch it on the news, and, it makes me feel sad, yeah. For me, it's helpful because it informs me. And it makes me sympathize with all the people.
My name is Sarah Paxton. I'm 32, and I work as the tasting room and events manager for Wild Heaven Craft Beers. I think sometimes it can be harmful because I think sometimes it turns into just a spectacle, and it's not respectful to people who are trying to deal with loss. However, in some of these cases, people who are victims are the ones filming and Facebook streaming, and they clearly have a message that they want to put out there.
Folks from the streets of Atlanta talking to us about how they are coping with the stream of horrific police shooting and other kinds of videos that we've been seeing in our Facebook feeds these last few days. Roxanne, I'm going to ask kind of an awkward question on behalf of white people like myself. I feel that I often struggle with how to interact with my friends of color online in these circumstances, because I feel that the most important thing that I can do is listen and just shut up and just be receptive to things that other people are saying. But I also want to voice my support. But I've also seen friends complain about how their white friends seem to be going on with their lives through these last couple of weeks, posting vacation, you know, photos and videos of their kids. Is there either of you best practices for white friends on social media?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Yes, they are practices. And I think acknowledging and believing and supporting the pain that communities of color, people of color are expressing on Facebook can be really powerful, and not trying to minimize, get off the hook, victim blame, because that can be very painful. And so sitting with the pain means acknowledging that you too are sad, that you feel what they're saying, that you believe them, because being seen, heard, and valued by white folk, I think, has been a challenge for many people of color when they speak their truth about racism. And to be an ally is about allowing the people who are experiencing these horrible truths to allow that to also be your truth and not to impose your truth and your version, which may make you feel better, on their experience. So I think you're on the right track, supporting and sitting with your friends of color and letting them know that you hear, see, and value them, and also maybe participating in collective action. And not only for white individuals, but collective action has been shown to be very beneficial for people of color who are in this space of pain, because it provides, even if it's somewhat illusory, a sense of control, but it definitely also provides the real sense of community.
Atira, anything that you'd add to that in our last 30 seconds here?
Yes, and I think, you know, when an identity is threatened, the best thing you can do is to affirm and validate it. And sometimes affirmation and validation can come through being silent. And I think a lot of people are frustrated right now with some of their white friends about not having something to say. But sometimes you just need to give people the space, because maybe what someone has to say is a question. And in a time of mourning and pain and grief, it's not that we necessarily want to be the representative. So from my opinion, I think that a simple text of "I'm here" is enough versus "so what are your thoughts on it?"
Right.
You know, because that can
people
be
don't necessarily want to be
well.
drawn out on the topic. Yeah. Follow their lead. Absolutely. That's Atira Charles, professor of at Florida A&M University, executive director of the MASK Project. Also with her was Roxanne Donovan, professor of psychology and interdisciplinary studies at Kennesaw State. Thank you very much both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.